Nice Friday night, at least down in my neck of the woods. It's not too bad. And tonight we've got a very special guest with us, of course, as always, a good friend of ours as well, Joey Ward from West Georgia Paranormal Society. We're going to get with him in just a second. I just wanted to remind everybody that to please join us in the chat room, and also we can take a live call-in. So if you'd like to call in and ask us a question, ask Joey a question, we'd love to hear from you. The number is there on the screen, 347-945-7799. And so, without any further ado, let's talk about Joey. Joey Ward is the founder and director of the West Georgia Paranormal Research Society, team of scientific paranormal researchers founded in December of 2005. Before that, Joey's own personal experiences led him to the study and research of the paranormal. His area of concentration deals with the scientific explanation of paranormal activity as it relates to quantum science and thermodynamics. Sounds pretty impressive so far. Joey is currently active as a guest on Internet and FM paranormal radio across the U.S., having appeared on over 30 radio shows. He has also been a guest speaker at conventions such as Ghost Talk in Savannah and OmegaCon in Birmingham, Alabama. And by the way, he's going to be a speaker at the Paranexus Conference this October in Tampa as well. His other interests include acting as the Georgia representative for the International Paranormal Investigators Network and working as a staff writer for ParaHub Radio. In addition, Joey and his investigative team are now filming a local paranormal TV show for airing later this year. Joey now hosts his own radio show called Beyond the Boundaries on Pulse Talk Radio, and he's currently working on his first book on the paranormal, which will be available to the public sometime around the end of 2008. Joey, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Hey, you guys. How are y'all tonight?
Great.
Terrific. Good to have you, Joey.
I sound pretty impressive, don't I? Either that or I paid somebody a lot of money to write that.
Or both.
Or both.
Yes.
I hired an impressive writer. That's what it was. Yeah, I when I get into something, I get into it big.
Yeah, apparently. And you know, Grant, you know, Joey, I mean, he's got all these things going and, you know, appearing everywhere and thinking, how the hell does he do that?
He's one busy guy.
Lots of vitamins. And actually, I don't tell anybody, but I learned the secret of cloning.
So, oh, really?
When you see me somewhere, it may not be the alpha unit. It may be one of the betas. It may be a beta unit. I can't guarantee you. To tell the truth, I can't pull myself apart anymore.
Well, it's good to have you on the program tonight. You know, we met, all three of us met here about, 3 months ago has it been now? At Casadega. We were at a conference there, and we had a chance to get to know Joey a little bit, and him, us, and we liked him, and he hated us, right, Grant?
Yep.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to come on the show tonight, so I could bash you guys.
Oh, cool. Well, that's good. We can take a little bashing, can't we, Grant?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. So, Joey, you started your group in 2005, December, is that what I read?
Yeah. We're 2.5 years old now.
Okay, cool. That's actually the same month and time I started Spirit Team. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, we're still babes in the woods, so to speak, compared to, you know, some of the more established groups, but we're getting there.
Oh, he's humble, isn't he, Grant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Joey, how many folks have you got in your group right now?
Including myself, there are 8 of us. We've remained pretty solid in terms of membership and, you know, the size of our group. We've had a little bit of turnover, but by and large, the core of the group now are the same members that were a part of it when we, you know, started back in December of 2005. So we've got a group of people that are familiar and comfortable working with each other, and that's a big part of success.
Sure makes a big difference when you've got a core nucleus of folks that you can work with and count on. And we've got that. We're fortunate now with our Tampa and Lakeland chapters that are really tight.
Right.
I mean, you kind of, you know, establish a group based around the beliefs of the founders, and, you know, I don't know if that sounds selfish or what, but, you know, the founders are obviously going to try to put together a group that believes the same way, that practices the same techniques or ideas, and for the most part, our group is like-minded, but, you know, it's normal. People are going to bump heads on occasion, and, you know, that's just a part of it, getting ideas from different people. Sometimes the founders' ideas are not always the best ideas, but, you know, we try not to admit that to anyone.
Well, I wouldn't either.
You know, sometimes I'll grudgingly go along with something or admit it, but I don't like to admit when somebody comes up with a better idea.
That's funny.
He never does. Hey, Joey, as Doug mentioned in your bio, you had some experiences that kind of led you down this path, and can you kind of elaborate on what was it that kind of drove you to this type of endeavor?
The craziness.
Yeah, you know, what drove me down the path of darkness, so to speak.
We're all on it, Joey.
Yeah, I think most people that are in this, especially the ones that stay committed to it, have a personal interest in it. And by that, I mean most of them have had personal experiences. And they've done the usual things. They've bought books, and they've gone on the Internet, and they've talked with people. And at some point, like in my case, I decided to form a group to investigate it and to get more out of it, because for me as a person that's experienced it and as an investigator, I'm out to, you know, to try to find answers to help people, and at the same time to get answers, you know, for my own questions as to, you know, what did I see, what did I hear, was it real, was it, you know, hallucinations, you know, those sort of things. And the longer I do this and the more things that I encounter, the more that I believe that there is, you know, what we consider paranormal activity. Now, what I tell people that surprises them is that I don't believe in ghosts. And they say, well, why are you a paranormal investigator? And I say, well, I don't believe in ghosts in the traditional sense, the way that they're portrayed in books and movies. I believe that there is an afterlife, a higher level of existence, but that it is something more along scientific lines and not the traditional, you know, the ball and chain, the moaning and groaning and the things that you pay $8 to go to the movie to see, you know.
So what prompted you to just start it? You just wanted to do your own thing, have your own group?
I started out with the idea that I would, you know, would hook up with someone else, and there are some other, you know, other groups in this area, and I worked with some other people. I worked some independently, and I just wasn't getting the satisfaction from it. I guess I felt like, obviously, one, having my own group would put me in a position to, you know, to work more, to help people, to actually coordinate and work investigations myself and gain more from it. So in a way, perhaps when I started out, it was for personal reasons more so than anything else. And as it's gone along and the group's evolved, and, you know, and I've studied the different techniques, the different ways that groups and people in general investigate, I've learned to adapt and try to assimilate ideas from, you know, different areas, including the scientific, the spiritual, metaphysical, And then just the psychological approach as it relates to the client themselves, who I feel most of the time are the most neglected part of the process.
Yeah. How so?
Well, you're giving me these little two-word questions.
Okay, we'll keep you talking for 2 hours, and then we'll close it.
Man. I gotta have lots of cigarettes.
Well, you better get some on a break.
I think that, for the most part, a lot of the groups that are out there now, you know, and I don't point fingers because, I mean, for as many people as I know and as many groups as I know, it's a drop in the bucket. There are so many out there that I run into each day that I have no clue, you know, like they contact me through one means or another. And what I find is that there are all too often are too many groups out there that approach this from the wrong way. They have the basic rudimentary knowledge, you know, of what a paranormal investigator is, or they have the basic equipment or the basic ideas, and they go into the documents. And granted, that's part of the process, you know, to document the activity or to prove or disprove the activity. But all too often, that's as far as their process goes. You know, they go in and they set up their equipment, they do their job, and they leave. And when it's all said and done, the client has really not benefited at all from the experience. And I really think that that's a valuable part of the process, but it's not the most important part of the process. And that would be the client themselves, the fact that they have, by the point that they've called you in, more than likely they've exhausted all other means of resolving the problem. They've called the carpenters, the electricians, the plumbers, whoever, to try to put a natural explanation to it. And by the time a paranormal group is called in, they're at the end of the rope. They're frustrated, or they're scared, or they're even contemplating the possibility of having to move out of the house. You know, the children are scared if their children. It's totally disrupted their daily life. And a paranormal group comes in almost as their last resort. And they're literally, you know, expecting a miracle. You know, these guys couldn't tell us what was going on. So, you know, we're bringing you guys in. Give us some answers, you know. Explain it away. You know, show us there's nothing to it. If there is something to it, give us some options. You know, how do we deal with this? We don't want to leave our house. You know, help us with this problem. And most groups just aren't set up for that. You know, they go in with their equipment, and if the owner says, you know, we need your help beyond this. Yeah, your equipment is fine. It all looks cool. You know what you're doing with it. But what can you do to help me now that you've identified the fact that there is something going on? And most groups throw their hands up. You know, they're not equipped to deal with it. Or worst case scenario, they try to deal with it when they're not equipped to deal with it. And they make it, you know, a lot worse.
You know, Joey, one of the conclusions that I think Grant and I both have come to, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Grant, but I think one of the things we've come to, a conclusion we've come to in probably the last couple, 3 weeks especially, is that I think that a lot of groups are missing where the research is. The research is not in most cases now. The research is not necessarily with the ghosts or any paranormal phenomena or alleged paranormal phenomena. The research is in the psychology of the client. Is that what you're trying to say?
Right. You know, your investigators will put together statistics, and you know they will tell you that 90-something% of the time, it's perfectly normal. I like to tell people, from my understanding, that 95% of the time, it's a natural occurrence. It's something that can be explained away as an environmental variable or, you know, something to do with the location of the property. That leaves 5%. Well, of that 5%, probably 80% of that is psychological.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I don't lump the psychological in with the other 95% is obviously there's a difference between the noises in the house being structural as opposed to the noises in the house being in someone's head. And,
I hear dead people.
Yeah, or you know that the house creaks, so it's a ghost. Well, no, we were able to determine that it's, you know, some loose boards in the attic or whatever. You get past that, and then about 80% of the other 5% is psychological. It's something that they worked themselves into. You know, they bought the house, and then someone says something about it being haunted, or you know, something comes along and puts the notion in their head. Psychologically, it can be other things. So EMF spikes, hypersensitivity to EMF activity, things like that that can be actually having an effect on the owner in terms of hallucinations, you know, paranoia, psychosis.
Imagination.
Yeah, just an overactive imagination. You know, hypersensitive people can sometimes even develop rashes from different things. And to them, it's very real, especially if there's some physical form of it shows up on their body. They really go over the edge and believe that they're being physically assaulted or whatever else. And then throw in the fact that by the time we get there, that level of paranoia has gone to, you know, a fever pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not dealing with just a client. You're dealing with someone who not only needs answers, they need reassurance, they may need counseling, that they need some kind of resolution to it. And truthfully, by the time you get there, they're looking at you as their last possible resort. So they're expecting a miracle in some ways. And that really just leaves a small percentage that truthfully turns out to be paranormal. I really think a lot of paranormal groups overprescribe. In other words, they all too often diagnose paranormal activity as paranormal when it is not.
And you know, Joey, what you're talking about here is really, it's the truth according to our experiences as well. What, and this I think is a very, very important point for any paranormal researchers who are listening or who listen to the archive of this recording to really understand this. If the truth be told, the times that we encounter paranormal, bona fide paranormal activity, you know, if that's what you want to call it, are very slim. They're not that often. And what we're left with is dealing with what you're talking about, the psychology of the entire matter. And what I want to point out here, just to underscore what you're talking about, is that paranormal researchers need to understand that the human mind is extremely powerful, and it can manifest all kinds of things. I mean, that's been proven in a lot of cultures. Just using the mind can manifest all kinds of stuff. And it's very real, as you say, to the person. But as a paranormal researcher, we have to cut through that. What's the paranormal component here, if any, and what's the psychological component here? And that's why paranormal researchers need to be at least some educated to an extent on understanding human nature, understanding people, because that's what this is about. That's what this is about. Somebody's phone's ringing. I don't know whose it is. It's not mine.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know that this is something that's possible, but and it's actually just something I thought of while we were discussing this, but it would probably behoove most groups, if it were where they could, to have their members attend or take one or two basic psychology courses at a college.
Yes. And
they'll get a degree, just take a few classes just to get the basic ideas behind psychology and just to, you know, to learn how the mind can play tricks on you.
Yes. I mean, that's an excellent thing. And, you know, call me an opportunist, but that's exactly why I put several chapters in my CPI course on the human component, on understanding human nature, understanding ourselves and how the whole thing works, because that's where it's at. If you don't have that foundation, the rest of it's really a moot point. It's not an issue. So, I'm happy. That's one of the things I really like about you, Joey, is that you've got this down-to-earth, real-world viewpoint and understanding of what paranormal research is all about. And frankly, your view, and of course Grant's and mine as well, is a lot closer, I think, in many ways, to parapsychology rather than just paranormal research, as it were. What do you think, Grant?
I think that's what differentiates us from the run-of-the-mill kind of folks that want to go out and go ghost busting. I think that we approach it differently. You know, and I guess the question that begs to be asked of Joey is, still there?
Yeah. Well, you.
I thought I might have gotten lost there for a second. The question that begs to ask Joey is, when you have a case where there's all kinds of psychological implications, How does your group feel about him?
You're breaking up a little bit, Grant. I think he's asking, how does your group handle it?
Truthfully, for me, I would have to be, you know, totally honest at this point and say that
no lie to
place to deal with it. Like I said, the members of our group are scientifically minded. We do have, you know, sensitive for the metaphysical aspect, but we're truthfully not equipped to deal with the psychological aspects of an investigation, and, you know, most groups are probably not.
What would you say that you need? What would you say you need be equipped?
Well, I mean, like I said, I like the idea of groups having some psychology training. If you can't necessarily have people, you know, take a few classes, or if you're not in a position maybe to have a psychologist as a consultant for the group, you know, those would both be good things.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I hate to do is to refer people to something else, you know, or somebody else.
Yeah.
You hate to go in and do an investigation, and at some point you say, well, okay, this really seems to be more of a psychological issue than paranormal. You know, how do you go tell the client that? How do you sit down and say, well, you know, there's not really anything paranormal going on here, but it's in your head. And, you know, like, we can refer you to some people. You know, that's basically a slap in the face. You call them crazy. And, you know, you're washing your hands of it and saying, well, we're paranormal investigators. We're not equipped to deal with psychological issues. So here's a card. Here's someone we know. Go talk to them. We're out of here.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because and this is a great thing, and I'm glad you're bringing this up, because this is so important. Let's make a bridge. Let's venture away from, quote, giving them psychological advice, because unless you're a licensed psychologist or therapist, you know, you can get in trouble for that stuff. But let's talk more about coaching the client. Now, in those cases where the client is not an obvious whack job or have some serious mental disorders, let's not go there, because those are different situations. Hopefully we have done a pre-screening and maybe even a pre-investigation so that we don't get involved in that kind of a thing. But let's take a typical client, you know, pretty, by and large, balanced and so forth, but maybe there's some issues. Maybe there's some psychology going on in the home. Maybe there's some a poor relationship or something like that, and so a lot of this stuff is coming up. The question is, can we coach the client in a proper way? And the answer is yes. And most people, if you just think about it, is if you have any kind of experience in life, just take a deep breath, folks. Think about your own experience. Think about your life experience. Think about the lessons you've learned. And Joey, I know that you're more than capable of this. Can you tell the client, you know, can you coach them to take their power back? And I'm not talking directly to you, Joey. I'm just talking to everybody. Can you coach them to take their power back? In the instance where you think that there might be a need for some different things, you could very delicately and tactfully put it. One of the things that some of our previous clients have found a benefit in is perhaps talking to somebody about some of the different things that are going on. And they'll think, well, they'll think I'm crazy. Well, no, I don't think they will. You know, if you talk to a counselor, and I like to use that word, counselor, or rather than perhaps therapist or psychologist or psychiatrist. And so I don't think this is as hard as it may sound. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if a group or a founder or whoever will, you know, take a little time and, you know, even catch their breath, because when you venture beyond the scientific or the metaphysical or whatever and delve into that, you do need to be careful, like you said, tactful about your words, about the response. But, yeah, it's something that you could very easily work with the family or the client, not necessarily a whole group, but maybe just one or two members of the team that were better equipped to sit down with them.
Yes.
And just, you know, sit down and have a heart-to-heart talk, you know,
mm-hmm.
Man-to-man, face-to-face, and say, you know, we're all human beings here. We're all capable of having the same kind of experiences. It just so happens in this particular case that you are the one dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we're here to help. You know, we'll talk with you. We'll be here as long as you need us. We'll come back for whatever you need. We're opening up our door to you, one human being to another, and we're going to help you get through this.
That's good. And, you know, to use that line, some of our previous clients have found help in this step or have found it beneficial to do this. That's a tactful and assertive way of presenting it so that, you know, you're not pointing them out. Because that's saying, hey, we've had clients who have had the same thing or similar thing, so you're not alone, and they found some benefit here. And that's something that we can all practice.
Yeah, just association. Let them see that they're not a unique case or that they're not the oddball or something like mm-hmm. that. You know, and remind them that if that was the case, then paranormal investigators would be out of work.
Yeah.
You know, Jim, one of the things that you really touched on is so important is to be a good listener under those circumstances.
A little bit louder, Grant. You're a little bit low.
To be a good listener under those circumstances. A lot of times that's what those folks need more than anything else is to have somebody to ventilate because if you provide an atmosphere for them where they feel very safe.
Yeah, quite often, it's just about listening. I think, Doug, this is one of your pet peeves, is it don't give advice unless it's solicited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just because somebody wants to talk to you about their problems doesn't mean that they're actually asking you for advice. They just want a sounding board. They want someone to talk to. They want someone maybe to be able to vent to that's not going to judge them, that's not going to make a hasty decision, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they want you to come out with advice.
So we have to use discretion.
Yeah, you have to be tactful. You know, if they say, if you were me, what would you do? Okay, that's fine. They've asked for advice. But oftentimes listening can be just as simple as doing nothing but listening. It's not, you know, it's not a hard thing to do. It doesn't take any exertion. You don't have to work up a sweat. You just sit and listen. And if they don't ask for advice or don't ask for an opinion, then all they want is someone to listen.
Yep, I agree with that. And so, folks, some good stuff being talked about here. Listen to your clients. Of course, they're going to want to vent when you first talk to them anyway. Just shut up and let them vent. Let them talk. Let them give it all to you because they need that. And that's a release for them. So let them just go. And once they're done, once they've kind of dried up a little bit, then you can start asking them some specific questions and that sort of thing. Play it by ear. We're coming down on the bottom of the hour. We appreciate everybody that has joined us. And if you're listening but not in the chat room, feel free to join us there. If you'd like to call in, please do that. We'll be taking callers anytime you want to call in. Ask Joey some questions. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite everybody to take a look at and visit paranexus.org if you haven't already. Paranexus is a professional association of paranormal researchers, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, even ufologists, and we're really trying to make it a top-notch professional association. So go take a look. It's growing. There's more and more people joining. We've got a charter membership now available for $5 for 6 months. We've also got the conference coming up this October in Tampa. Again, designed to be a top-notch conference where you can really learn some great things. In fact, Joey's going to be talking on this very subject at the conference. But not only will you learn, but you'll have a great time, too. We've got the Paranexus Challenge on Friday night, and we've got some teams that we will choose. You can apply for that if you want to be a part of that Paranexus Challenge. You can apply for that. And we'll be making selections a little bit later on this summer. We've got a great location all set up for this. I know that everybody's just going to be really happy about that one. Plus, we're going to video broadcast it live back to the group. And so it's going to be a great thing. And then Saturday night, we've got the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball. A lot of learning and education, but a lot of networking and a lot of having a good time. And that's how we met. That's how we met Joey at a conference like this. And the thing I love about it is you can forge these great relationships, great friendships. So take a look at paranexus.org. We'd love to have you there. If you'll hang with us, we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Appreciate you listening. Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org. We're back. This is Doug Kelly, co-host of Paranexus Universe, along with Grant Rubendunce. Welcome back, Grant.
Hey, happy Friday night, everybody.
And we have our friend and special guest on with us, Joey Ward, the founder and director of the West Georgia Paranormal Research Society. Welcome back, Joey.
Hey, guys. That was a good break. I needed a Pepsi run, so that worked good for me.
Cool. So we've been talking about the psychology of investigations. We've been talking about how that is such a huge deal in most of these investigations where the psychological factors come into play. And, Grant, you had something to follow up with that discussion?
I just wanted to kind of, you know, ask Joey, can you kind of walk us through how you handle a case from the minute you get the first call to, you know, how you go about setting up your investigations and what sort of things you might initially discuss with the client.
Yeah, I think this is one thing that will change quite a bit as a team evolves, as they're as they go along and get a few years under their belt, maybe members come and go, they'll evolve the process of an investigation. And normally what we'll do once we get a contact, whether it be an email, phone call, or a referral, generally the first thing that I will do is make phone contact with the client. Matter of fact, I called a person today that was referred to us and made the initial contact. And I'll speak with the client, get them a little information over the phone. Basically, the initial phone call is more of a call to put them at ease, to let them know that we are going to respond to the need, and to reassure them that we're not going to sweep them under the rug or get to them down the road, that sort of thing, or just ignore them altogether. Generally, after that, what I like to do is try to schedule a pre-investigation meeting, and by that, normally it will just be myself and maybe one other team member. We'll meet the client, sit down and talk to them, give them an idea of what we do, how long we've been doing it, kind of give them our credentials so that they know what they're dealing with, put them at ease by letting them know that the members of the group are not are not there to put them down or, to relate our experiences. Like I said, to get it down to the human level, let them know that, we're humans too and that we've all had our own experiences and that's why we're doing this. And then, of course, while we're there, we'll take our baseline readings, kind of get a feel for the place, get an idea of equipment needs, and discuss options with the client as far as, what they feel they would like to do, when they would like to do it. Basically, the first meeting for me is as much of a, not really a meet and greet, but it is a face-to-face meeting just to let them know that they're dealing with human beings and human beings that can relate to the issues that they're having, human beings that aren't going to judge them and are going to be there, however long it takes. So the initial meeting is I wouldn't say it's psychological, but it is a way to put them at ease and to maybe even establish a level of trust. After that, of course, you get into the research aspect of it. You kind of research the property, if there's some history involved, contact previous owners, if possible, to see if this is a recurring issue, if it happened to the owners before the clients. Try to see if it's something tied to the building or if it's tied to the land or if it is something tied to the clients themselves. And most people don't realize that, all of this goes on with a paranormal team. All they know is that, you make a call, you show up, you do an investigation. They don't realize how much research and legwork and paperwork and things like that are involved behind the scenes before the investigation actually occurs. And with all that said, all that's in place before you go back and actually conduct the investigation.
So that gives you a great foundation. Hopefully you've got a much better picture so that you can put the pieces of the puzzle together. Joey, when you're doing research on a person's property or a residence, can you tell our audience where you go to find that information?
Well, yeah, for me, I'm fortunate in this area in that I'm a county official, and that puts me in a good position to, to have access to a lot of public records. Of course, most of these public records are just that. They're public, to anybody. But the best place to go, obviously, talk to previous owners, previous tenants, go to your local courthouse. Look for deeds, death certificates. You can, newspaper articles are always a good find if there's some traumatic occurrence that's happened at the property, a fire or a murder or something like that. Go to the local media and research your sources there. All of these generally, if you take the time and effort and there's some background to the property, You know, if you take a day or two, you're going to find the information that you need. You're going to find a newspaper clippings or something that's going to shed some light on what occurred there. Quite often, by the time that you get there, the story has changed quite a bit from what actually occurred. You know, it's just like the old game where somebody would whisper a word that would go around the circle, and by the time it got back to the first person, it wasn't even what it started out.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, the same thing happens with this. You'll look into some famous story of a brutal murder or whatever, and by the time you actually pull the actual facts of the case, you'll find out that, one, it either didn't happen at all, or, two, it was not even at that location. And, and quite often people are fueled by those kind of things. You know, if you buy a piece of property and there's some history of a suicide in the home or a murder or whatever, those kind of things start going through your mind. And it's very conceivable to have a case where that kind of thing is going on and you've researched it and you go back and tell the owners, well, guess what? It didn't even happen here. Well, boom, a light clicks on, oh, you mean it didn't happen here? Well, okay, everything's fine now. Those kind of things happen. You can pull that kind of information, and this is really stuff that the client themselves can go and access. But they're not gonna do that for the most part. There are a few people that are inquisitive enough or are determined enough that they'll do that themselves. But then again, that's what we're there for. We go through that process. We bring that information together. And then based on what we come up with, it kind of gives us an idea going into the investigation what may or may not turn up. It doesn't mean that we basically have predetermined what we think is going to happen. But it gives us an idea of what to focus on or even who to focus on in the investigation.
Now, Jordan, when you do that, folks, do you ask them to journal or document any activity that occurs in the home in between the time that you first meet them and the time that you start an investigation?
Yeah, what I will ask them, and a lot of times the client will tell you that they've been doing things like that themselves. They'll say, well, I went out and bought a tape recorder, or I went out and bought a video camera. I don't normally tell them to go grab some equipment and start, chronicling things before we arrive, because, we're going to do that when we get there. But I do tell them to write down things. Don't go buy a tape recorder, don't go borrow one and start recording things, because odds are if you get something on the recording, it's going to upset them even more.
Yeah, that can happen too.
Write down, it doesn't hurt to write down a thing or two, keep a journal, keep a notepad, write down things. So especially if it seems like the things happen around the same time or the same day, things like that start correlating together, and then it may get into the issue of whether it's something residual as opposed to intelligent. But the information generally doesn't really help the client that much as it does us.
Yeah, we play that. Sorry, folks. Hey, Grant, check your mic volume.
Will do.
Yeah, it went way all the way up, as a matter of fact. I'll wait just a second here. Hey, Joey. I'll let Grant adjust his mic because I'm getting that echo. Okay, Joey. So what you're saying here makes a lot of sense. I mean, we had a case here a couple of months ago where they had watched too many episodes of Ghost Hunters, and they had their digital recorder, and they had recorded, tried doing some EVP work, and they got this one, which may or may not have been real. I don't know, and frankly, I don't care based on them. But that just freaked them out, and that just got their imaginations going all the more. Grant was on that one with me, too. Yeah, it's good volume there.
The worst thing that can happen sometimes is that they, kind of take matters into their own hands, or they read into something too much. Like you said, they get a picture that looks like something paranormal and scares them. They get an EVP of something, and we may very well come in and get the exact same thing. But but the difference is that we're hopefully doing it under some type of controlled situation.
Objective.
We'll be in a position to sit down. Yeah, we'll be in a position to sit down and talk with them about it, as opposed to them, leaving the house one day, setting up a recorder, coming home, sitting down to dinner, playing it back, and all of a sudden here's get out, and they all throwing boots, running out the front door. It sounds it sounds like a simple thing to do, just go get a recorder and document it yourself. But if you're dealing with that kind of an aspect already, then if they do get any evidence to back it up, it's gone from, I heard a noise to, not only did I hear it, but now this recorder is showing that I heard it. I've got hard evidence to back it up. And a lot of times that's just going to raise a level of hysteria or fear to, another level.
So what you're talking about with this whole psychology thing and everything right now is really managing clients' expectations, managing the client, their belief system.
Yeah, you really have to deal with it from two aspects. You have to go in as a paranormal investigator with your set of rules, your set of ideas, and your own belief systems and techniques for how you're going to do the job. But you also have to go in and juggle that along with the client's beliefs, whether it be religious or whatever it may be, and don't let your beliefs or your systems override theirs, because bottom line, they're the client, they're the one with the issues. They've invited you into their home out of a need. It's not about you. It's not about the investigation. It's about the client. The investigation is just a tool to help alleviate their fears or to help determine a response to to deal with.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about psychology, and we're touching on the science aspect of it. Let's go a little deeper into the science part of it. What do you guys do with that part of it, the science part? How do you conduct an investigation keeping that objective science aspect in mind?
Well, in our group, like I said, we're primarily science, but we are hybrid. We do have sensitive, so we bring the metaphysical part into it as well. And part of the problem in doing that, one, it is it is a more effective means of investigating, but two, you have to some degree, you have to bring the two together, and yet at the same time, you have to keep them apart. With the metaphysical aspect, it's purely word of mouth. It's purely based on impressions,
subjective
personal experience. Yeah, it's all personal experiences, because what a psychic or a sensitive tells you that they're picking up on or seeing or hearing, you're not necessarily recording. You may actually be able to record something that they're they're hearing or whatever, but you're going more on the feelings of whatever that they're giving to you, and you take notes on all that, without giving them any prior information about the properties, so that you don't contaminate their readings. The scientific part of it is, I don't know, it's maybe it's a little more boring, I suppose. I'm a gadget person. I like working with equipment, but it is a bit more boring than the metaphysical side. I mean, you go in with your voice recorders and your night shot cameras and your DVR surveillance systems and your EMF meters and your ambient thermal couples and all the gadgets of the trade, your Gauss meters, and we're looking for things that we believe are signs of paranormal manifestations. There again, it's a belief because we have no scientific basis to back it up. We're saying that this cold spot exists here because it is a spirit, drawing energy from the air around it, and the most readily available source of energy is heat. So it creates a cold spot. Well, can we prove that scientifically? No, no way, no how. But we go on that theory. EMF readings, if there's an unusual EMF activity in an area where there should not be any activity, we believe that that is some form of a manifestation. There again, scientifically, can we prove that? No, we can't. So we call it scientific because we're using tools and devices to measure different forms of measurable activity. But from a scientific standpoint, we can't actually prove that any of the things that we measure and record are definitive proof of paranormal activity.
So we're looking for patterns as well.
Yeah, I mean, basically everything we're doing is the same thing now that people were doing to the same degree 100 years ago, just that we have more sophisticated equipment to deal with it now than they did then. So it's, you know, there's a level of frustration with all of it. From a psychic standpoint, they are frustrated because, you know, they're giving you the information that they have, but they can't back it up most of the time unless they're able to provide information that they should have no means of knowing. You know, scientifically, we can get EMF spikes, we can get coil spikes, we can get all kinds of activity, you know, time after time after time, and we can't prove that to anybody either. So whether you're on the metaphysical side of the fence or the science side, you're compiling evidence.
Check
and basically
the mic,
nothing's been won.
You're absolutely correct on that. And that's exactly why you're bringing the two together, right? Is to try to make some, get some more complete picture, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there are quite a few groups that are purely scientific, and then there are groups that are purely spiritual. And I think in cases like that, that they're both missing out on part of the process, because there needs to be a blending of the two to give you the best possible means of compiling data and evidence.
Cool. Who's got the train?
Oh, it's me.
Oh, it's you. Okay.
Yeah. Train's going by.
Trainville, huh?
It's a 9 o'clocker or something like that.
Yeah, we're getting close.
It's the last train to Clarksville.
All right. So let's talk about the science aspect. Do you have a favorite piece of equipment? Do you think that one of the equipment tools is any better than the other, or?
Well, I mean, from a personal standpoint, I'm kind of mixed on things. I see a lot of people these days who have become firm believers in the idea of communicating with spirits through, you know, EMF meters and things like that, and mm-hmm. I'm still a bit skeptical on that because I just don't have enough data myself personally to, you know, to voice an opinion. Things like Frank's box, I don't really have a lot of experience with that, so I can't really form an opinion on those one or another. For myself, I follow the video aspect, you know, and I guess the largest percentage of evidence that we gather is audio. Video is rare. Digital photography is more times than not when you get activity with something audio, and that's probably my favorite area is, you know, concentrate on all aspects, but specifically on the audio, because that does seem to be the area where we have the most success.
Is there anything that you do in particular to when you're doing EVP work that perhaps helps you to be more successful?
Well, I think some people are more successful. Excuse me. I believe that some people are more successful at capturing evidence than others. You know, obviously, most groups will put out audio equipment and leave it unattended, and then, you know, you'll also carry some around. You'll do EVP sessions where you'll ask questions and you'll ask for responses, that sort of thing. And there are people that are more likely to get responses. We have a member in our group who, if anyone is going to get activity or a response, she will. And I don't know if it's something about her that is more, you know, attractive to activity. You know, she tends to draw activity or what. But she just has a lot of success with it. And it's been that way as long as I've known her, and she's actually been investigating a lot longer than I have.
Is she sensitive, did you say?
No, well, to a degree I think she is, but she's not really what you would, you know, call a psychic or anything. You know, she'll tell you herself that she's not psychically inclined. but for whatever reason, during EVP sessions or whatever, she does tend to capture, you know, a lot more audio activity than any of the other members of our group. I know myself, for one, I'm the worst one in the world. If you want to get audio evidence, don't hand me the recorder. You won't get. And I don't know what it is, but I get nothing. I get no audio activity. Other people, you know, are hitting and miss, and some people are just like a magnet.
What is she doing that's different?
Well, and that's the strange thing. Nothing really. I mean, we, basically during an EVP session or whatever, you know, you ask the same standard questions that probably every investigative group asks during a session. You know, what is your name, those kind of things. And then if you have more general or more specific information about the haunting or who you believe is haunting or who the family believes, you know, you'll cater the questions toward whoever you think is there. But for some reason, she has that ability. And generally what we will do because of that during EVP sessions is that we let her, you know, lead the session. And we found that whenever she leads the sessions, we have more evidence, as opposed to, say, I lead the session or someone else, or we actually let people, you know, take turns asking questions. Mm. For whatever reason, when she controls that part of the investigation, we have better results.
What kind of an approach does she take? Does she have a very kindly, you know, kindly approach? Or
she has a calmer voice, I think. And like I said, having done this as long as she has, this is her niche. This is where she fits in well. She's comfortable doing the EVP sessions. You know, she asks the right questions. If we get, say, an audible response, meaning something that we can hear, you know, she will acknowledge that. She will thank them for it. She communicates with them on a personal level. And, you know, that may very well be why she has more success at it, because she's able to conduct the session at a personable level and interact from, you know, from one, basically maybe from one human being to another, you know, being better alive.
So. All right. We'll pick this conversation up too after the break. We're coming down to up to the top of the hour. So we're talking with Joey Ward of West Georgia Paranormal Research Society, and we're going to continue this discussion. We've got a lot more to talk about. We've been talking about psychology, a little bit about the science. We're going to get into the physiology of it and some of Joey's thinking and ideas and concepts of what might be going on. So hang tough with us, folks. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government? Does the soul continue on after we die?
Climb aboard the black ship of Paranormal Radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WPRTRadio.com for more information.
To Paranexus Universe. This is Doug Kelly. Glad you guys could join us tonight. I'm here with Grant, my good friend and co-host. Welcome back, Grant.
Hey, it's good to be here.
And we're talking with our other good friend and guest, Joey Ward, founder and director of the West Georgia Paranormal Research Society. Welcome back, Joey.
Thanks, guys. I'm still kicking.
You're still kicking. Well, that's still good. Kicking. Okay, so we've been talking about psychology, we've been talking about science, we've been talking about EVPs. Well, let's talk about physiology for a minute. You've got some thinking, some thoughts on this whole thing, right? Quantum mechanics, et cetera?
Yeah, I got into this. Well, honestly, if you go back a few years, back to before I was even a paranormal investigator, I was a person that studied science, you know, whether it was quantum mechanics, quantum science. And when I got back into paranormal investigations, I actually kind of got away from that for a while. And I went back and studied my roots. And it seemed to me that science could very possibly explain paranormal activity. Now, granted, you know, my theories are not unique. You know, other people have posed the same ideas. But I came upon the notion that basically, physics as science has explained it, may not be necessarily correct or all inclusive. And by that I mean, you know, obviously, physics and things tells us that no two objects can occupy the same space at the same time. But if you take into consideration the possibility of a multi-dimensional universe, and the possibility that there are other layers of existence, other dimensions, if you will, other planes of existence that are existing in conjunction with our own, you know, even as we speak here now. In these other planes, the laws of physics do not apply the same way that they do here. You know, they exist perhaps at a different phase or frequency or whatever than we do. You know, if that's true and if that's possible, is it possible that two things can occupy what we consider the same space at the same time? You know, if that's so, then is it possible that the afterlife is an ascension to, you know, a higher level
mm-hmm.
of existence than the physical body, or to an existence within another dimension of existence? And what we are seeing in paranormal activity is brief moments or occurrences in time where the separation between the two dimensions is weakened, whether it's, you know, electrical activity during storms, whether it's electromagnetic activity from ley lines, solar flares, you know, things like that that could be causing a disturbance. And if, you know, if that's so, is it possible that what we are seeing is, you know, brief glimpses, sounds, smells, or whatever it may be, that are slipping through into our, you know, into our physical world from that side for brief moments? And, you know, when we're seeing and hearing things, you know, is it safe to say that if that's the case, and maybe they're seeing and hearing us, and maybe the, you know, maybe we're the ghost as far as they're concerned?
Yeah,
it's out there. It's out there, but it does in a strange sort of way make sense.
Yes, it does. Kind of reminds you of that movie. What was it called? The Others.
Yeah.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, and at the end, it turned out that when she thought the other people were the ghosts, it turned out that they were the ghosts.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting. Good, Grant.
You know what I was going to say is, when we had Dr. Roll on about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Dr. William Roll, who is a noted parapsychologist, one of the things that he said that I thought was really intriguing was the fact that he thought that all of this could be explained naturally, and that the manifestation of what people thought were paranormal activities were really related to, like, RSPK. And, you know, if that's the case, then it's all, once again, in the matter of interpretation. And, of course, Dr. Roll was heavy on the quantum physics, too.
Yeah,
basically, if you accept the dimensional aspect of it, then what you're saying is that paranormal activity is still paranormal, but we're accustomed to. But there is an explanation behind the fact that it's explained for, and it doesn't exist, just not in the way that it's been explained, or the beliefs that people have, may not be the actual correct version.
Yeah, it is, and you know, for all we know, it could absolutely be the truth. I mean, with quantum mechanics and the parallel universe thing, who knows if they're overlapping? I mean, they've proven, it's my understanding that they've essentially proven that one atom can occupy, or is it an electron, one of the two, can occupy two different times.
Quantum entanglement.
That's right, that's what Dr. Roll was talking about, entanglement.
Which is essentially means we negate.
We negate time and space. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joey. Do you have something?
Yeah. I'm not one of these. I don't believe in the, you know, the matter and the antimatter and necessarily a balance. You know, like for a you here, there's an anti-dog there or something. Yeah, as long as the two stay on their side, you know, like in the movies where the two came in contact, there was a possibility that it would just nullify everything, you know, that sort of thing. I think, though, that there is obviously going to be places outside of what we know where the laws that apply here don't apply there, and that's going to apply to, you know, physics and anything else. The laws that, as far as we know them, are, you know, are changing every day. That's the nature of science. You know, first a theory comes along, a hypothesis, whatever, then experimentation, and finally it's something that's accepted by the scientific community. But practically every day, you know, the scientific community is going back and changing the old rules. And the farther we go along, especially at the molecular level, they're starting to find that more and more of the things that they've accepted as fact up until now may not necessarily be true.
Mm-hmm.
So scientists have always had a difficult time rationalizing the big universe out there, the cosmos, with the small, and it just don't jive. There's never been a unified theory, so it leaves a lot of room for questionings about the influence of quantum mechanics and what role it may play in paranormal activity.
Okay, cool. What about physiology? I mean, is that what you're talking about, Joey, the quantum mechanics aspect when you mention physiology?
Well, I mean, from a, you know, actually the physiology might even be a different aspect of it, and I get into that part, I guess, from the more from the thermodynamics or just from another scientific aspect. But, you know, the first law of thermodynamics states that energy is a constant. You know, it changes, but it's never created or destroyed, and we are creatures of energy. You know, we give off heat, we give off BTUs, whatever. People have asked the question, okay, if that's the case, if we're creatures of energy, then when we pass away, where does that energy go? You know, the body goes back into the ground, decays, whatever. The soul, the intelligence of what we are, and let's just say it passes to this other dimension that I'm speaking of. Well, where does that energy go? Does it stay here? You know, does it go with us? What, you know, what happens to it? And some people have said, well, the energy is, you know, it's recycled. And that's more of a problem, maybe a reincarnation type of thing. You know, is it recycled and used with someone else? Does it go back into the system itself? And maybe it helps. You know, maybe it's a tree. I don't know. That kind of gets into an area that I'm not that knowledgeable of. And I guess because I'm not a proponent of reincarnation.
Yeah.
But you know, it just gets down into that part of the big debate over what are we actually made of. You know, and scientists and doctors will obviously tell you that, you know, the components of what the body's made up of, water and carbon and all these things, and that's the easy part. You know, yeah, when it breaks down and it dies, it decays. It goes back into the earth. You know, what happens to the rest of you, the consciousness? Is that the end of it? You know, is death the end of all things? And obviously that's, you know, from a paranormal investigator standpoint, that's the big question we're asking. Is that the end of it? Well, if it's proven it exists, then I'll be happy that, you know, you do go on somewhere else, your consciousness, whatever. The physical body is taken out of the equation, age and time, and the rest of you goes on. You know, do you come back? You know, incarnation is, like I said, is not. It's not a strong point for me. I haven't been able to move around on that one and embrace it. I'm not a proponent of it.
I'm with you on that. I mean, I can't. Could it happen? Who knows? But the thing that kills me is, I mean, and not everybody believes it this way. This is more the Eastern philosophy, if I'm correct in my understanding, that, you know, you keep coming around until you learn the lessons, and then you can ascend to be with God or whoever. And if that's true, God doesn't want to see me when I get there. But we won't go into that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's true, if we keep coming back to get it right, we would be packed in here like sardines.
Yeah. That makes
because
sense.
I think very few people are getting it right.
Yeah, well, hopefully we are. All right, so we talked about the science aspect. We talked about the psychology, a little bit on physiology. Let's get into some hard and fast techniques, tips, things that you would recommend to other groups, whether they're just starting out or whether they've been doing it a while? Because we've talked about this before, we all have, that even though a group has been out there a long time does not necessarily mean that they have evolved and grown. And I don't mean anything bad by that to anybody listening. I mean, we all evolve, we all grow, or we should. And so if you're listening to this broadcast or listening to the archive version, think about that. How's your group growing? How are you evolving? Do you still have 1 foot in the old school or 2 feet in the old school, things that have been around for decades, if not longer? You know, what are you doing to grow? So, Joey, let's talk about that. Why do you take the approach you take? You talked about the scientific aspect, and you also talked about the spiritual or the metaphysical aspect. Why do you take that?
Let me get back to that first part that you mentioned about advice to other groups. And for me, number one, I feel that if there is a weakness or a detriment to groups that are established, is that quite often they've gotten set in their ways.
Yeah.
And they aren't open to change. For myself, I've done a lot of changing in the last 6 months. In my approach to it, not from the scientific and metaphysical aspect, but just from the human aspect, the psychological approach, implementing something into the program that wasn't there before. And my advice to groups, not even on a technical level, but one would be, you know, be open-minded. And that sounds kind of strange because we all preach that, you know, don't judge right or wrong, it exists or doesn't exist, be open-minded. But quite often groups don't do that. You have groups out there that are geared toward proving it exists, and you have groups that are geared toward proving that it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing one or the other, you've defeated the purpose.
Exactly.
You know, you're not, you know, why even bother to do it if you're already convinced it exists? And what's the point of, you know, collecting evidence if you're convinced that it doesn't exist? Same rules apply. Why even bother? You're out there. If you're truly a research group, you're out there to gather evidence to prove or disprove one way or another. And if at some point, you know, this is proven definitively to exist or it's proven definitively not to exist, you know, then I'll move on to do something else. But I don't think that's going to happen in our lifetime, and who knows how long it may be before it's ever put to rest one way or another. The other thing is your belief system. You have to obviously take into account the belief system of the team members, which gets back into that, you know, that whole aspect of what frame of mind do you take into the job as an investigator, but also taking into consideration first and foremost, even ahead of your own personal beliefs, the beliefs of the client going in. You know, if they believe that they're haunted, then, you know, they're haunted.
Mm-hmm.
There may not be anything in the world going on there, but if they are scared of something going on in their house, then that is a haunting. And you have to approach it from that point. You may go in, and within 5 minutes of the group, you may say, oh, man, there's nothing in the world going on here. Well, as far as that client's concerned, there is. So you can't, you know, you can't do the five-minute approach and say, okay, it's over, nothing going on, you people are just calling your head. You've got to conduct the investigation the same as always. You've got to give the client the same level of professionalism, and then you deal with it beyond that point as to, like you said, tactfully easing them into the fact that based on your investigation and your research that there is no paranormal activity, and here's, you know, we can go forward from here. But, you know, belief system is 90% of what goes on, whether it's the client's belief when they're not, or their belief and fear in the haunting when they are. And, you have to work with that. So, you know, my advice to groups, not even dealing with equipment, is just be open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And think through the mind of the client.
That's great.
Yeah. Put yourself in the other shoes. What if you were the client? What if you were the person that's called someone because things are going on, and these people come in, and they do a shoddy job, or they come in and belittle you, or make you feel like you're crazy or whatever, and leave. You know, just put yourself in their shoes for a few minutes and then go about the investigation as if the results of the investigation were going to benefit you as much as it will them.
It's got to be win-win.
Another train going by.
Yeah. So it's got to be a win-win proposition when it comes to these investigations. You know, we need to win.
Yeah.
Clients.
Yeah, if you leave as an investigator and you feel like you've accomplished something but the client hasn't been helped, then you failed.
You know,
right.
we kind of talked about that at Casadega, and, you know, as a healthcare professional myself, one of the things that we always try to do, and I think that we've incorporated into the Spirit Team, is we go by the motto of do no harm. And, you know, we've encountered, and I'm sure the same has happened to you, Joey, where we go out on an investigation and we're not the first group that's been there. And in some circumstances, there's actually been a lot more harm done by other groups that don't kind of approach investigations the same way we do.
Yeah, I couldn't get all of that. But you were talking about other groups maybe doing more harm than good. And the more I do this, the more I come across that sort of thing where you go in and maybe, you know, your group goes in after another group has gone in and conducted their investigation, and they've either been, you know, unprofessional, they didn't have the courtesy to follow up with the clients, their methods were maybe from a religious standpoint were in conflict with the client's religious beliefs. There are so many ways, there's really only one way to resolve an investigation successfully, and there are so many ways to mess it up. So it's you have to be on your toes from start to finish and think through every little thing you do, and you can't leave anything out, because it's a reputation thing. I mean, we're all part of a community. Granted, the unity is not where it should be, but by and large, people outside of the paranormal community look at us as one entity. You know, you're a paranormal investigator. It doesn't matter if your group has been doing this 20 years and my group has been doing it 20 minutes. They look at us all the same way.
Right.
And the actions of one group are going to reflect on the community as a whole in a, you know, in a geographic area. So it damages the credibility when someone doesn't get a good work from a team, and then other teams come along and run into roadblocks and obstacles, and people who don't take you seriously or who don't trust you because of the actions of other groups.
It certainly makes it difficult when you're going in as the second person coming in there to help out sometimes when they already have a preconceived notion, like you kind of alluded to before. And it kind of reminds me, you know, I see many times in my professional career people who like the doctor shop. And, you know, the folks that aren't responsible in the process certainly, you know, don't make it easier for the rest of us who are trying to do a really professional or use the professional approach in how we're dealing with these poor folks.
Yeah, it's, I mean, people, you know, to us, I mean, we're dedicated individuals to this. We're doing this for a purpose, and we have a passion for it. That's why we keep doing it, you know, over and over and over again when we have good days and bad days and frustrating results and that sort of thing. But to the general public, they don't see it that way. For the most part, they see it as, you know, some people see it as an evil thing. Some people see it as a group of thrill seekers with nothing better to do. You know, and some people see us as, well, you know, kind of like a used car salesman or something. You know, they think that you're out to get something. And, you know, quite often they're surprised that your respectable groups don't do this for any money.
Mm-hmm.
They think that you're out for a dollar. And they're surprised that you don't charge for the services, which goes a long way towards establishing that trust, because if there's no money involved, then, you know, they're a little more at ease because they don't feel like that you're going to, you know, pull a hoax, or you're going to try to manipulate them into something in some way as to, you know, make money off of it.
So it just underscores the importance of any paranormal research group going in on a professional level, conducting themselves as professional, being very careful of what they say and how they say it. This is especially true of some newer team members, that they need to be careful of what they say, especially around the client. In fact, one of the things that we do, and maybe you do as well, is we really don't want team members discussing things within earshot. Yeah, within earshot of the client. So that's why we'll take breaks. We go out and debrief, and we compare notes and things like that as the case warrants. So, you know, if our listeners are in a group that's not doing that, think about doing that. Be careful of what you say, because even some innocent comments can fuel the imagination of a client.
Yeah, you can end up with the same kind of damage that if the client sets up their own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The client is sitting there or whatever, and somebody comes in and says, "Oh my God, I was in the other room and something just hit me." Well, you know, great. Of course, you just scared the client out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to you, it's a wonderful experience. It validates what you're doing. But the client, all you've done is validated their fear. And you haven't helped them one bit by coming in and, you know, putting on a show and you know, showing your own excitement or your own fear or whatever. Yeah, it's always better to keep that to yourself, discuss it away from the client. You know, like you said, take breaks or whatever and discuss it amongst yourselves, but don't let the client see emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lumps you run.
And you know what else is important, too, I think, Joey, is one of the things that we have that both Doug and I worked on and really believe in is that, and I also think this differentiates us from other groups, is we have standards and protocols that each member has to understand those standards and protocols so that we can avoid those situations where those things happen. That doesn't mean that they're not going to, you know, that the possibility doesn't exist that somebody might get excited, but nonetheless, if we all have a standards and protocol to adhere to, it gives us integrity.
Yeah, and I think most groups, established groups, have some, you know, some sense of standards and protocols. It's just that perhaps they don't go into enough detail. You know, they have the obvious ones like, you know, no alcoholic consumption, no drugs, you know, the basic things. But they don't go into the little things like how to act around the client. You know, what's a tactful way to address situations, how to communicate amongst yourselves in the presence of the client, you know, things like that. And most groups don't go that deep into their protocol.
Okay. All right. So we're down at the bottom of the hour, folks. We've just got one segment left. So if you're listening to us, we first of all, thank you. We appreciate you spending your time with us. But we'd love to have some questions. Get in the chat room, throw out a question or two if you'd like to call in. The numbers are on your screen. It's also in the chat room. It's 347-945-7799. Hey, we're regular guys. We're real live human beings. If you've got something you'd like to share, an experience along these lines, or if you'd like to ask Joey or any of us a question, please don't be shy. Go ahead and call in. We'll put you on the air. Go in the chat room, ask a question, because we are, in fact, nice guys.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, if people don't ask questions and call it in, then we're basically just sitting here talking to each other, which we do anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, make this important to y'all. Those of you who are listening, I mean, don't forget, too, that we're also looking to grow as well. So this is a two-way street. If you've got something to offer, something to share, we'd love to hear from you. And if you'll hang with us, we'll be back in just a minute, and we will finish out the hour with Joey Ward. Hang on top with us.
West Georgia Paranormal Research Society is composed of individuals with a common goal, the scientific investigation of the paranormal. It is our hope that these investigations will allow those of us in the paranormal community to bring about answers that will benefit us, as well as helping to educate the general public. We approach all investigations and questions with the utmost professionalism and confidentiality required for the situation. If you are experiencing strange occurrences around your home or place of business, such as unexplained noises, smells, or visual phenomenon, these could be possible signs of paranormal activity. If you're interested in finding some answers to these questions, or if you'd like to have our team investigate the activity, visit us at www.wgprs.com for more information. Research, assistance, understanding. We're here to help you.
And we're back. This is Doug Kelly with my co-host Grant Rubendunst and our special guest Joey Ward. We are talking about a lot of the interesting stuff on paranormal investigations. We talked about psychology, a little bit on quantum mechanics, the science of it. And Grant had a question he'd like to ask Joey. And Grant, just before you do that, just encourage everybody, if you've got a question, get in the chat room and ask. Give us a call on the live line. Go ahead, Grant.
Hey, I was, before I asked my question, Sal at the Stanley Hotel has said that she's going to give us a call, so we'll be looking
cool.
for your now. Joey, I just wanted to ask you, in the years that you've been investigating, have you ever come across a case that you suspect was truly paranormal in nature?
Yeah, I've had a few. I mean, we obviously most of the cases fall into the natural or the ones that even at the end maybe there's still a question mark. I've had a couple of cases where, I mean, for me personally, I feel that there was definitely paranormal activity because of the personal experiences that I had during the investigation. There was one case where I experienced an audible voice phenomenon. We were actually still setting up the equipment for the investigation, and the lights were still on. I was in a room by myself setting up equipment, and I had an audible voice in my right ear from probably no more than a foot away, a woman's voice. And, you know, for me, that was validation of paranormal activity. Later that night, our recording equipment picked up the same voice, you know, which gave us hard evidence to back up my claim as to what I had heard. Now, there was another case where I actually experienced a full-bodied apparition. And, you know, there again, whenever you get into full-bodied apparitions, the whole concept of, you know, hallucinations or tricks of the eyes and things like that come in. You know, there's 100 things that it could have been natural in occurrence and caused it. But, again, that particular night, the validation for me was the fact that the description I gave of the apparition I saw matched exactly a picture of the last owner. I mean, down to his height, his build, his hairstyle, the way his hair parted. You know, I described him in perfect detail. And the evidence compiled by other teams that night all pointed to the same room where I had seen him. And this, there again, taking into account that these teams didn't come together and compare notes until the end of the investigation. So 5 different teams corroborated activity in that one room where I saw the apparition. And then the apparition that I described matched perfectly a portrait of the man. So, you know, personal experiences, some hard evidence in terms of audio data, and then, of course, corroboration by other teams. You know, that's about as good as it's going to get for what
we
do.
Now,
for those, particular cases.
Now, when you saw that apparition, Joey, do you feel that it was a residual in nature or that it was trying to interact with you?
No, it was, I definitely feel in this case that it was not residual. The reason being was that we were taking pictures in this particular room, and there was a picture on the mantle of the children of the lightkeeper. It was in a lighthouse in Savannah, and we were taking pictures of the picture of the children. And basically, we had the tour guide take the picture down, and he was holding it in front of him while another person was snapping, you know, a couple of pictures of this portrait. I was standing next to the tour guide, and what I did is I turned my head to look away so that the flash of the camera wouldn't blind me. Well, in the flash of the camera, that's when I see him. You know, my first thought is, well, okay, the flash, you know, tricked my eyes. There was a reflection from a mirror, something like that. Well, after I go back at the end, and, you know, I check everything. There's no mirror. There's nothing in the room to cast a shadow. Obviously, by being able to describe him in detail implied that, you know, it wasn't one of us, because even a reflection of one of us would, you know, the description would have matched us. In this particular case, the apparition was standing directly behind the tour guide, looking over his shoulder, because he was a good foot taller than him, looking over his shoulder as if to say, what are you doing with that picture?
That's interesting.
So the first thing I told him was, when we got through, I said, you know, go ahead and put the picture back where you found it. And he's like, why? I said, just put the picture back and then I'll tell you. So after it was over and I told him why, you know, he freaks out. But I said, you know, it's no big deal. I said, he was just looking to see what you were doing with that picture. But like I said, by the fact that he was, you know, a good foot taller, and there were no mirrors. There's nothing in the room that could have caused, you know, what I would consider the normally attributable ways of, you know, tricking somebody's vision. And the fact that I was able to actually describe him in detail, it wasn't a shadow. You know, it wasn't just, you know, a dark shadow or something. It was actually a person, to the point that I was able to, you know, tell you the flannel shirt that he had on, the color of it, the pants, the shoes, you know, the way his hair was thinning and the way it was parted, and his general height. And I guess in my case, a good thing is I have kind of not necessarily a photographic memory, but I'm pretty good at, you know, at picking up on things quickly and you know, pulling them into short-term memory. And I was able to get enough out of the flash in the two flashes of the camera that, you know, I was able to give a description of him without having seen him at all and described him in detail. And then the other groups, of course, corroborating it with the fact that none of them had any activity on the ground except in that one room. And it was anything from, you know, cold spots to battery drainage to EMS spikes to my actual visual.
Well, cool. We've drawn lines. Let's go, caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Paranix Universe.
Good evening, guys. How's everything? This is Sal from the Shanley Hotel.
Hey, Sal. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Not too bad. Not too bad. We've been getting a lot of activity. Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Go ahead, Sal.
Okay.
We got you.
We've been getting a lot of activity recently. We're starting to renovate again, and we're picking up a lot of stuff.
Who did you see again, Sal?
We've been getting a lot of activity. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Shanley Hotel.
Oh, yeah, in Colorado.
There's a Shanley Hotel in Colorado?
Right.
Oh, that's Shanley.
Oh, Shanley. No,
Shanley.
Where is the Shanley Hotel? I was misreading.
Shanley's
I'm
in
sorry.
New York. Shanley
okay.
is in New York. And
Shanley
we
Hotel.
Have, four, right, it's S-H-A-N-L-E-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And we have quite a few spirits in the hotel. We got anywhere from 30 to 35. And it's very active. I have many paranormal teams come in, investigate from all over. And that's what I want to talk to you about. You and Joey about when you do an investigation, okay, and what kind of report do you give back to the owners?
Do you want to take that, Joey?
Yeah, generally what I will do is I've got kind of a standard report. I will print up a report with it will list the members who were there, you know, it will list the basics, the time that we were there, you know, general information. It will list, basically what I'll do is compile any evidence and put that on a media form to give to the client, you know, as their own copy. The report
right.
will have an index that will list, if there's, you know, if we give them, say, 7 or 8 audio recordings of activity, I'll have an index that will list what we think each recording is saying, and it will also list where we picked it up at. You know, if it was in room 3 or whatever. We'll list approximately what time the recorder picked up the activity, what we think that it's saying. We'll also, you know, list little details like what type of audio equipment we were using. You know, we probably go into some detail that the client may not, you know, may not actually benefit them, but at
right,
the same
right.
time, it lets them know that we're thorough in our details. And then
I guess,
we'll, you know, we'll give our own assumptions, and it's generally. For a normal report, it will be, a lot of times it will be, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 pages, along with a copy of the media.
All right. Because out of all the paranormal groups I have here, some of them are really professional, and some aren't. You know, I had a paranormal group here from Philadelphia, right on the other side of Philly, and they sent me a full report, like you explained, with a disc. That night they were here, they got 24 EVPs.
Oh.
They said what rooms they were in and where they got them and everything. And South Jersey is another one that did the same thing. But a lot of groups will tell you, we got stuff, but then they don't let you know what they got. You know, we got
they tell you they don't.
We got this. And that drives me crazy at times.
They tell you they're not going to share it with you? Is that what you're saying?
They just don't send you nothing. But they said they got stuff. Then you don't hear from them again, you know, until they want to come back to the hotel. And then they'll come back and they'll, oh, we got this, we got that, you know, and then they'll show us some of the EVPs that they got.
Hmm. Interesting.
How old is the new hotel, Sal?
It's a Shanley Hotel. The hotel was built in 1895. The original hotel that was there was built in 1845, burned down in 1895, and was rebuilt. And it was rebuilt on two foundations because the fire started next door in a house, and the house caught on fire, and it burned down the hotel, it spread to the hotel. And when they rebuilt the hotel, they built it on both foundations.
Huh. So are you in New York City?
We're upstate New York.
Okay. What town are you in?
We're in Napanock.
Okay. And
about
so
45 minutes from Kingston.
Okay, so you have groups come in, but if they do, you'd like a report.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, and that's a big problem I have with a lot of them, you know. And like I say, there's a lot of them that are really professional, and then there's that other group that, you know, they don't give you anything.
Well, that's something for groups to remember too. You know, if you're going in to report something, you know, let the owners know.
Right.
You know, and it's
GN, right?
Say again, Grant.
I said especially if the owners have been gracious enough to let you come and investigate.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that's the way it works. It's a give and take.
When they come into the hotel, I give them a tour of the hotel, and they're on their own. I go upstairs in my apartment in the hotel, and they got the run of the whole hotel. You know,
wish we were closer, Sal.
Yeah, I was
you know,
the same thing.
They have everything. They got the brothel area, the basement, everything in the hotel. You know.
How big is your hotel?
Three stories. It has it's about almost 9,000 square feet.
Hmm. It's good size.
And
Go ahead.
And I have a stone house which is built in the 1700s, and that's about 6,000 square feet.
So when these groups come in, how do you work that? Do you charge them to come in?
I charge them to come in, yes.
Okay.
And they have to, because I get taxes and other things to pay, you know, so
right.
I charge them to come in. A lot of them come in, they come in like maybe 5, 6 o'clock at night, and they stay until the next morning, you know.
So they fill rooms from you.
Until they're finished doing what they have to do, and then they leave, and they have the whole hotel to themselves, you know.
Do they rent rooms from you? Is that how you charge them? You just charge them an investigation fee type of thing?
Most of them rent rooms, or they'll come in as a group, and you know we required at least 10 people to a group, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they come in and they either they'll rent the room, and if they rent the room, it costs $100 with the investigation in the room.
Hmm.
And
is that per person or for the whole group?
No, that's per person.
Okay. Well, Sal, I really appreciate you calling in. I really appreciate you stopping in and listening as often as you are. Thanks so much.
You guys have a good show. You have a great show.
Hey, it's nice talking to you, too.
Yeah, and you're into some of the other stuff. Here in a few minutes, we're going to be wrapping it up, and I'm going to be announcing who's coming up in the next three visits, and I think people are going to be excited about that. So, Sal, you have a great night calling in.
You too now. You take care. Bye.
Good night.
You too. Bye.
Okay, so we are kind of coming down on the home stretch here. Joey, anything else on your mind that you want to get out to groups that maybe something that can benefit them that we haven't asked?
Work together, network with each other, not just for referrals, but just share your knowledge, share data. It's a deal for groups to come together sometimes and join investigations. It lets you how other groups work, whether or not they see yours. you can share, you can learn from each other, and it just promotes things in the community. So, if you're in an area, whether it's close by, reach out to each other and work together on whatever level you're comfortable with, and you're going to see a difference. It's going to better the community as a whole. It may even strengthen your team, in terms of referral base or whatever. But, this is like in the research field. Networking always benefits you, in trying to stay to yourself or being territorial, things like that are not going to benefit you. Be open-minded to other groups the same way that you should be open-minded to the investigations themselves.
And as I've said a half a zillion times, we're not competitors, we're colleagues. We're all looking for the same thing. We all have our approaches are some slightly different. And so keep that in mind, groups. Work with each other. And if somebody has an investigation in your area, another group, it's fine. Work with them, collaborate, and see what can happen. We've been talking about a lot of interesting things, and I'm looking forward to Joey's presentation at the Paranexus Conference coming up in Tampa this October. He's going to be talking on managing client expectations and similar things that we've talked about tonight. Hope you'll take a look at paranexus.org, look at the conference, look what we have in store. We do have some other topics you're going to be adding. We're going to be adding some evidence review topic, and also an enhanced EVP review, and just techniques for getting EVPs and things, along with a number of other topics, including parapsychology, psychic defense, and we've got the psychic circle. We're even working on some other things, and the more registrations we get, the more tracks or seminar tracks we can add, and we're hoping to be able to add some other ones on even cryptozoology and ufology and some of those different things. But if you can, if you haven't already, visit paranexus.org and join us in a professional association. Also, I wanted to talk about and let our listeners know who's coming up. Next week, on April 25th, we've got Forbidden Archaeology with Michael Primo. Maybe you've heard of his book. He's got some. He's done some different research and so forth, and has come up with some different alternatives. Grant, you're a little bit familiar with that. What's the story with that?
He did a TV show a number of years ago on NBC, and it was hosted by Charlton Heston, and he looks at artifacts that don't fit traditional archaeology. So it ought to be a very interesting show. He is a very esteemed academician, and we're looking forward to his appearance.
Yeah, and maybe you've read his book. It's, what is it, 800 pages, 900 pages, something like that, but it's an amazing thing. And then May 2nd, we've got Sasquatch Research with Jason Valenti. If you're into that side of the paranormal, cryptozoology, that's going to be an excellent show as well. And I just got word tonight during the broadcast that on May 9th, we are going to have Frank Fascino Jr. and Stanton Friedman on talking about talking about ufology, and specifically the what's the name of that? The monster up in North Carolina, was it, Grant?
Yeah, the Flatwood Monster.
Flatwood Monster, yeah.
Case, which is a very interesting case and very different from a lot of UFO cases that have been recorded. So it ought to be a really interesting show, and between Stanton and Mr. Fascino, we ought to have a really good time.
Yeah. So we're trying to get even more guests, and if you're listening and you'd like to be a guest on Paranexus University, drop us a line. Go visit paranexusradio.org. You'll see our contact information there. Or if you know somebody you'd like to have on the show or you'd like to hear on the show, give them a let us know, and we'll try to contact him. We're looking for guests, and especially, obviously interesting people, but we're looking for guests who can offer something to those of us who are researching all that is paranormal. So if you've got ideas for the show, we're all ears. We welcome your comments. We welcome your feedback. We're only trying to make it better and better, and we're glad that you took the time out tonight to join us, and we appreciate Sal calling in, and those of you who are in the chat room as well. Joey, as always, it's a pleasure talking with you, and we really appreciate the time you took to be on the show.
Oh, thanks. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed talking with you and Grant.
Yeah, and why don't you tell us your website so listeners can go? And also, you know, you got your own radio show, so they might want to tune into that, Beyond the Boundaries. Where can we get info on that?
Okay, our team website is www.wgcrs.com. They can visit us there, register on the site in our forums, interact with us there for information, that sort of thing. And as far as the radio show, it is a part of the Pulse Paranormal Network. It's a network that we just started, myself and Lee Hammond of Pulse Radio, just a couple of months ago. And we're pulling together a network of radio shows. Terra Hub Radio will be coming on with us next month, and a few others. My show is called Beyond the Boundaries Radio. It's starting next month. It will be moving from Wednesday nights to Thursday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm looking for guests as well. I've had a few interesting guests. Doug has been was one of my early guests, and we're going to have a good lineup in May. We're going to go anywhere from cryptozoology to authors, scientists. I'm trying to explore all the aspects. We'll talk about just about anything paranormal, whatever the idea. The website is, there's no www. This is one of those weird ones because it's in the UK. It's just pulseparanormal.forumarena.com. We are moving the site to a unique domain name. It's in the process now, something that will be easier for people to remember. But we invite people to come there and check out the shows, and we'd love to have the listeners come in and join us.
And we do have Joey's website linked on paranexusradio.org if you want to go there, and you can, of course, get the Beyond the Boundaries radio link off of his website, too. So anyway, again, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate all our listeners joining in, and we look forward to seeing you again next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And with that, Grant, always a pleasure with you, my friend.
And same here, Doug. And, Joey, it was wonderful having you on the show.
Hi, Grant. I enjoyed being here with you guys.
Everybody have a great Friday night and a great weekend. Good night.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Talk Radio.